Bertrand L. Comparé.
Tonight I want to talk about a subject that somebody needs to talk about and the regular churches don't. Our churches in general have made our religion a thing of complete confusion. They don't understand it themselves, and they can't teach their people about it. And that is why every time you find a debate held between a really intelligent atheist and some clergyman, the atheist makes a monkey out of him, because the atheist knows more about the Bible than he does, and the clergyman doesn't know where to look for the answers. If he really had some faith in the book that he purports to uphold, he'd have no trouble disposing of the atheist. Our churches have tried to whittle our religion down to one thing only. They've limited it to, first of all, the individual, not the nation. And as to the individual, they've limited it to one thing, and that is his salvation in a future life. In spite of the fact that at least a good 5/6 of the Bible deals with the nation, and no individual by himself could quote that. These preachers base this, of course, upon one thing that Paul said in 1 Corinthians chapter 2, verse 2, where he said this, "For I determined not to know anything among you save Jesus Christ and him crucified." So these preachers really carry that out. Their ignorance is total and absolute upon all subjects save that one. And no man who purports to speak the word of God is entitled to stand upon a platform if he doesn't know the rest of it. If he even read 2 Corinthians or 1 Corinthians, he'd know better. The first chapter of it shows why Paul said what he did. He says that the Corinthians knew these other things very well, but they were breaking into factions. Instead of realizing that this was the word of God, they were paying too much attention to the particular leaders who had taught them this. And one said, "Well, I'm a follower of Paul," and another said, "I'm a follower of somebody else," and so forth. And they were scrapping over which of the leaders was the greatest, instead of realizing that none of their leaders were anything but spokesmen for the word of God. So he said, "Among you, I'm not spending time on these other things. I've got to get you back on the first track. You've got to understand now what all this has led up to. That the fulfillment of everything in the Old Testament, which you know perfectly well, has actually come with the work that Jesus Christ has accomplished." Now, in that same thing, 1 Corinthians chapter 2, verse 6, he goes on to say, "Howbeit, we speak wisdom among those that are mature. But your average minister of today can't speak wisdom because he doesn't have it. He isn't mature himself mentally." Even for the individual, if these clergymen only would learn their book, they would realize that the laws of God are not abolished. They're for the individual. Christ himself said, this is Matthew 5, verses 17 and 18, "Think not that I am come to destroy the law of the prophets. I came not to destroy, but to fulfill. For verily I say unto you, till heaven and earth pass, one jot or one tittle shall in no wise pass from the law till all be fulfilled." When do heaven and earth pass away? You find that in Revelation 21, verse 1. It is after the return of Christ, after his thousand-year reign here on earth of the millennium, after the second resurrection for judgment and the wicked are disposed of, then, for the first time, it says the old heaven and earth had passed away, and I saw a new heaven and earth. So not until then will God's laws cease to be in effect. Then you'll have a different situation under which there can be a change in the rules. Now, even the individual couldn't receive salvation till he repented of his sins. And for the nation, there cannot be success until the nation turns back to the laws of God. The purpose of the law was never your salvation in another life. The purpose of the law was that you might live the best possible life here in this world. That you might have the best things which life in this world can provide. Take the dietary laws, for example. They're not concerned with what you're going to eat in heaven sometime or other. They are concerned with you're not eating unwholesome food here and now. Likewise, the financial laws. You're not going to have to borrow from the Jews in heaven. They never suspected that you were. But it was to keep you from getting into the clutches of Jewish usurers in this world that the financial laws were given. The law is a thing for here and now, not hereafter. Nearly all of the Bible is directed to the nation, not the individual. Fully 5/6 of it. It is something that while it is the individual's duty to obey, the results of it cannot be had if a scattered individual here and there are the only ones who obey it. It can be put into effect only nationally. Its laws, for example, cover government and administration, trial of lawsuits, standards of weights and measures, the agricultural laws, the dietary laws, care of the poor and needy, laws of warfare, the financial laws. All these things are for the nation. And likewise, it is true of all of these. The laws of God are natural laws, just as much so as the law of gravity. You cannot violate. They state something in the alternative. Do this, and you get good results. Fail to do it, and you get bad results. Now you have your choice. You can do one or the other, but you're going to get the results that you were told about. Good or bad, as the case may be. You don't violate the law of gravity if you jump out a 10th-story window. You obey it the hard way and pay the penalty. If you ride down in the elevator, you obey it the easy way and you get the benefit. And so with all of these. And that is a part of both national and individual destiny. And when we try to outwit destiny, to outwit God, we aren't going to get anywhere. This scheme of laws for the nation was given, and it is the part of the book that has an it. Now, so far as our final destiny to accomplish certain parts of God's will is concerned, that he stated definitely would happen, and there was no if about it. Then he told us, if you follow my law, you'll get there the easy way. If you don't, you'll still have to do what I say, but it'll be rough. Now take, for example, in the 28th chapter of Deuteronomy, where Moses was telling them this, and it shall come to pass, if thou shalt hearken diligently unto the voice of Yahweh thy God, to observe and do all his commandments, which I command thee this day, that Yahweh thy God will set thee on high above all nations of the earth, and all these blessings shall come on thee and overtake thee. Blessed shalt thou be in the city, and blessed shalt thou be in the field. Yahweh shall cause thine enemies that rise up against thee to be smitten before thy face. They shall come out against thee one way, and flee before thee seven ways. Yahweh shall command the blessing upon thee in thy storehouses, and in all that thou settest thine hand to. Yahweh shall establish thee a holy people unto himself, as he hath sworn to thee, if, note that, if thou shalt keep the commandments of Yahweh thy God, and walk in his ways. And all people of the earth shall see that thou art called by the name of Yahweh, and they shall be afraid of thee. And Yahweh shall make thee the head, and not the tail, and thou shalt be above only, and thou shalt not be beneath. So, note the if. You get the benefits if you obey. And he goes on, for example, in Leviticus, the 26th chapter. If ye walk in my statutes and keep my commandments and do them, then I will give you rain in due season, and the land shall yield her increase, and the trees of the field shall yield their fruit. And I will give peace in the land, and ye shall lie down, and none shall make you afraid. and I will rid evil beasts out of the land. Some of you remember, perhaps, when I talked to you here about what the Bible called beasts, and you noticed that some of them had 2 feet only instead of 4, and even behaved in some respects like human beings. And we're having trouble with them right now when they're conducting what they call demonstrations. God said he would rid these evil beasts out of the land. Neither shall the sword go through your land. And ye shall chase your enemies, and they shall fall before you with a sword. And 5 of you shall chase 100. And 100 of you shall put 10,000 to flight. And your enemies shall fall before you with a sword. Now that's the easy way. Victory in war that shatters your enemies and without any heavy penalty of casualties to you. But note this, though. Here's one that doesn't have any if. This is Jeremiah 51, verse 20. Thou art my battle axe and weapons of war, for with thee will I break in pieces the nations, and with thee will I destroy kingdoms. Now that's not an invitation or an offer. That's a command. God said these pagan nations that try to wrongly rule the earth, I'm going to shatter and destroy, and you're going to do it. You're my battle axe and weapons of war. Now you can do it the easy way, with little cost and few casualties. Or you can do it the bitter way, with thousands of your sons dead in the mud on the battlefield. But you're going to do it. There isn't any if about that. That's an absolute command. Well, which way do we choose to go? You know. And you know what it's cost us. For rebellion against God, there is a penalty. That's a destiny that our smartest politicians can't outwit. You can't fool God. He runs the show. He knows in advance what kind of a person you are and what you're likely to do. And he tells you, better do it this way, because if you don't, I've told you what will happen. We've had the warning. For example, in 2 Chronicles 15, verse 2, Yahweh is with you while ye be with him. And if ye seek him, he will be found by you. But if ye forsake him, he will forsake you. Do you think it's of no importance that we're taking the Bible out of our schools? That we're letting the Supreme Court substitute, you might say, compulsory atheism? Every time we've gone through that, our ancestors have gone through this repeatedly, and every time it led to disaster. It isn't as though this was something new where we might theorize about the results. It's happened with monotonous frequency. You know the saying, history repeats itself. One philosopher said, yes, the reason is that those who will not learn the lessons of history are compelled to relive them. That's what we've had to go through. In Jeremiah 22, verses 3 to 5, God tried to reason with us, and he found so few capable of reason. Thus saith Yahweh, execute judgment and righteousness, and deliver the spoiled out of the hand of the oppressor, and do no wrong, no violence to the stranger, the fatherless, nor the widow, neither shed innocent blood in this place. For if ye do this thing indeed, then shall there enter in by the gates of this house kings sitting upon the throne of David, riding in chariots and upon horses, he and his servants and his people. But if ye will not hear these words, I swear by myself, saith Yahweh, that this house shall become a desolation. And I don't need to tell you that it did. One thing that we are living out today in every detail, you find in the 28th chapter of Deuteronomy, verses 15 to 45. But it shall come to pass, if thou wilt not hearken unto the voice of Yahweh thy God, to observe, to do all his commandments and his statutes, which I command thee this day, that all these curses shall come upon thee and overtake thee. Remember, I read you the earlier part of it, where he said, if you do follow his laws, these blessings shall come. Now here's the other side of the coin. If you will not, all these curses shall come upon thee and overtake thee. There's more listed here, but note these as among the significant ones. Thy heaven that is over thy head shall be brass, and the earth that is under thee shall be iron. And Yahweh shall make the rain of thy land powder and dust. You remember the dust storms of the 1930s back in the Dust Bowl? One of these laws of God, one of the agricultural laws, is this. For 6 consecutive years, you may plow the land and sow your crops. In the 7th year, you must let it lie fallow. Now, an interesting thing came. Now, they had not mere legends, they had accurate records of just how many bushels of wheat per acre they got out of that land. Then came the Dust Bowl period, and they had to let the land lie fallow for, I think, 3 or 4 years. Otherwise, the whole states would have blown away. But the time came when, after letting the land rest, they again plowed it up and sowed it to crops. And they noticed a startling thing. The same fields in which they had their records, a yield of so many bushels to the acre, they got up to 400%. 4 times the yield per acre they'd gotten off that same field before. They could have followed God's law the easy way and gotten the profit. They followed it the hard way and paid the penalty. Though even then, when as a penalty they had to let it lie fallow, still, when they obeyed it then, however unwillingly, the next crop, they got the benefit. But they haven't learned even now. Thou shalt be oppressed and spoiled evermore, and no man shall save thee. Well, aren't we? Hasn't our government become one of ever-increasing oppression? Oppressed and spoiled, you bet. Our plundered taxpayers are facing a degree of ruthless rapacity that was not even visited upon the conqueror by the evil empires of the past. We're plundered and spoiled. No man saves us. We turn from one lying, cheating politician to another lying, cheating politician, and each one is as bad as the one before. That's right. That's one of the curses that was listed, and it's coming. The fruit of thy land and all thine labors shall a nation which thou knowest not eat up. That's right. We buy Cadillacs for Bantu chieftains. We spend $2 billion to arm the communist Tito, who has repeatedly and publicly declared that when war breaks out, he'll be fighting against us on the side of Russia. We're even pouring money into Castro's Cuba through the United Nations. Thou shalt become a proverb and a byword among all nations, whither Yahweh shall lead thee. Aren't we? Aren't we despised everywhere in the world because we have made ourselves despicable? The stranger that is within thee shall get up above thee very high, and thou shalt come down very low. Yeah. Actually, the mere figurehead, puppet, Kennedy, isn't running the country at all. He takes his orders from a Russian-born Jew, Walter Rostov. He shall lend to thee, and thou shalt not lend to him. He shall be the head, and thou shalt be the tail. Can you sum it all up in fewer words than that? God knew what he was talking about, didn't he? Now, if we'd obeyed God, we needn't have had all these troubles, the wars and so forth that we've been through. In Isaiah, the 48th chapter, hear ye this, O house of Jacob, which are called by the name of Israel, and are come forth out of the waters of Judah, which swear by the name of Yahweh, and make mention of the God of Israel, but not in truth, nor in righteousness. Thus saith Yahweh thy Redeemer, the Holy One of Israel, I am Yahweh thy God, which teacheth thee to profit, which leadeth thee by the way that thou shouldst go. Oh, that thou hadst hearkened to my commandments, then had thy peace been as a river, and thy righteousness as the waves of the sea. We could have had it if we hadn't been stupid, stubborn, and unfortunately, cowardly. We didn't have the brains to follow it, and we didn't have the courage to follow it. When actually, it was the easier way if we had only seen it. Again, in the 32nd chapter of Isaiah, and the work of righteousness shall be peace, and the effect of righteousness, quietness and assurance forever. And my people shall dwell in a peaceable habitation, and in sure dwellings, and in quiet resting places. Well, you know we haven't. And you know why? Evil Jews have become the complete masters of our government. For a while, under Roosevelt and Truman and Eisenhower, they were secretly the masters, and they got away with it. So now they don't have to pretend anymore. They're openly the masters. 85% of the alleged advisors from whom our boy apprentice president takes his orders are Jews. Those are the ones that appear openly in the picture. Well, the answers are in the book, of course. It was all foreseen. In Proverbs 25, verse 5, take away the wicked from before the king, and his throne shall be established in righteousness. Yeah. Take away the Jews from around Kennedy, and even he might do a right thing once in a while. You know, he has a record of having lied to the American people. You remember how toward the latter part of the Cuban fiasco, they came out and openly said the government has the right to lie to its people. And he has lied to us more than most of our politicians. But among the extremely few truthful things that he has said, he said that his administration is sophisticated. If you will look that up in the dictionary, you will find that the definition of sophisticated is this: adulterated with inferior substances. It can be remembered that once in his life, Mr. Kennedy spoke the truth. All right, the rest of the picture is here. Let's turn to Jeremiah this time. Jeremiah 5, verses 26 to 31. For among my people are found wicked men. Now the Bible uses language with great precision when it's translated accurately. He doesn't say my people are these wicked men, but he says among them you find these wicked people. Not his people, but found among them. They lay wait as he that set of snares. They set a trap to catch maidens. As a cage is full of birds, so are their houses full of deceit. Therefore they are become great and waxen rich. They are waxen fat. They shine. Yea, they overpass the deeds of the wicked. They judge not the cause of the fatherless, yet they prosper. And the right of the needy they do not judge. Shall not I visit for these things, saith Yahweh? Shall not my soul be avenged on such a nation as this? A wonderful and horrible thing is committed in the land. The prophets prophesy falsely, and the priests bear rule by their means. And my people love to have it so. And what will ye do in the end thereof? You know, today, by current usage, we consider prophecy to be a foretelling of the future, and a prophet, therefore, one who foretells the future. But that was not the original meaning of the word as used in the Bible. The prophet was one who spoke by divine inspiration and gave the word of God, and he was primarily a teacher. As part of that, he had occasionally to say, these things are going to happen to you if you don't behave. And he did, from time to time, predict the future. But that was not the primary part of it. So, the prophets or teachers teach falsely. And the priests bear rule by their means, yes. Actually, don't you see that today? What are your poor brainwashed kids in school being taught? You know what? They're making socialist robots out of it. And what do you get from the churches? Do you get any opposition to this evil thing? No. The churches go right along with it because they become as satanic as any other part of it. Well, how many people will wake up against it? No. They'd rather that you didn't bring up the unpleasant subject. My people love to have it so. But what will you do in the end thereof? You see, we forget that evil consists not merely of evil acts. We say, oh well, God will forgive us. We just say our prayers and believe in Jesus Christ, and he pardons the particular evil acts we've done. That's only part of it. That's the least of it. The trouble is that evil acts create evil conditions. And these evil conditions are going to be here till you do something to remedy it. What will you do in the end thereof? Every time, by your action or by your acquiescence, you set up these evil conditions. Sooner or later, you're going to have to right the wrong that you've done. Like any other burdensome debt, it carries a terrible rate of interest. And the longer you delay, the harder it is to pay that. That's what we're having to go through. And it was all in the book. It's been there all these thousands of years. But what church can you go into and have your minister preach that to you? Well, did anybody think that this was merely written for ancient times? You know, that was horse and buggy days, and we're sophisticated now. We're modern. Instead of riding a camel, we smoke one. Instead of getting run over by a chariot, we get run over by an automobile. We're very modern. And is it any better? All right. Let's turn to Isaiah 30, verses 8 to 10. Now go, write it before them in the book, that it may be for the time to come, forever and ever, that this is a rebellious people, lying children, children that will not hear the law of Yahweh, which say to the seers, see not, and to the prophets, prophesy not and do us right things, speak unto us smooth things, prophesy deceits. Isn't that true? If I wanted to give one of these soothing syrup talks about how this is the best of all possible worlds, and all you need to do is mix up and mongrelize and have everybody a half animal, well, you know, I could have 100 times as many people come in to listen to that. They don't want the truth. Speak unto us smooth things. Prophesy deceits. But they're going to have to pay for it. They're creating the condition that you are seeing as a boil coming to a head. Listen to Amos. Amos 5, verses 10 to 13. They hate him that rebuketh in the gate, and they abhor him that speaketh uprightly. For as much therefore as your treading is upon the poor, and ye take from him burdens of wheat, ye have built houses of hewn stone, but ye shall not dwell in them. Ye have planted pleasant vineyards, but ye shall not drink wine from them. For I know your manifold sins. They afflict the just. They take a bribe, and they turn aside the poor and the gate from their right. Therefore the prudent shall keep silence in that time, for it is an evil time. Don't they? Don't you know a lot of people that actually know the things you found out here, but they don't dare say so? Sure, it costs you plenty. I think I can say conservatively in my own case that what I have done in this work since 1947 has over that period of time cost me not less than $75,000 in lost work that would have come to me otherwise. In many instances, I can trace the fact that it was turned away from me by those who don't want any of us who say this to prosper. The prudent shall keep silence in those days, for it shall be an evil time. And it is. Well, here it is. You have the Jews carrying out the satanic plan. You know, every once in a while somebody says to me, "But Mr. Comperay, don't you think though that the converted Jews are all right?" Well, might be they could be converted into fertilizer and be some good that way. When you get home, you open your Bible to the 8th chapter of the Gospel of John. And beginning at verse 31, you read on through verse 44. That's where Christ identifies the Jews as the children of their father, the devil. Now, it starts right out with identifying what kind of Jews these are in John 8:31. What do you mean by a converted Jew? You mean a Jew that believes in Jesus Christ, don't you? All right. It says that these were Jews who believed in him. Peculiar Jews, weren't they? These were converted Jews. And they are the ones that he winds up in that same conversation finally saying, "Ye are the children of your father the devil, and the evil deeds of your father ye will do." That's the converted ones. And the others, you may be sure, know better. So if anybody tells you, "Well, but the converted Jews will be all right," you tell him, go brush the dust off the Bible and open it and read it. And see what Jesus Christ said. And if that man claims to be a Christian but says, "Oh, well, Christ was just lying about these poor persecuted people," then you know what kind of a Christian he is. Christ identified. Well, we've seen now that God said we could have good things if we would obey his law, and we were going to have trouble if we didn't. Well, what sort of things then ought we to be doing? Now, as I said before, it's not a matter of trying to get your individual personal salvation by obeying the law. That was never its object. One part of the law, and the dietary law, says that you shall not eat the flesh of an animal that has died of disease. All right. You find out in the field the carcass of a cow that has died of hoof and mouth disease, and you cut off a steak and cook it and eat it. No, you're not going to lose your salvation in the next world, but you're immediately going to lose your health in this one. And that's all that law ever had anything to do with. Well, let's briefly take a look at some of these. It's too big a subject to try to cover exhaustively in one evening. But let's hit some high spots. First, the agricultural law. Leviticus 25, verses 1 to 22, gives you this rule about the year of rest for the land every seventh year. Now, I mentioned to you the fact that One of the consequences of violating that can be these dust bowl conditions. But there's another one. You know how much scientific and semi-scientific literature there's been out in the past few years showing what they have discovered about the fact that our food needs to be supplemented. The trouble is that we have worn out our soil, and you cannot take out of the soil what is no longer in it. Sure, you can get ammonium nitrate and put on it, and the unhealthy plants that grow will turn green. But do you know why you're supposed to be taking those mineral supplements? Because they're not in the soil. Now, basically, the sand of the soil is pure mineral. But it's insoluble. And what will not dissolve in water cannot be taken up out of the soil to the plants. There live among the grains of sand in the soil countless trillions of bacteria. And as a part of their existence, a byproduct of their existence, they produce certain acids which corrode away the surface of these sand grains and break them down into compounds which will dissolve in water. Then the plants pick these up, and the necessary minerals are taken into the plants. You eat the plants directly in some cases. In other cases, your cattle eat them, and the mineral goes into the meat. Whether you're vegetarian or meat eater, whatever you get has to come out of the soil. For thousands of years, we bred our plants for heavy yield, which means drawing heavily on the soil. Now what happens is this. Your plants draw out of the soil each year more soluble minerals than these bacteria can replace. Now you started with quite a supply of it. It's like spending more than your income each year, and eventually you exhaust your savings. And from then on, you can't get any more than your income, and the income isn't sufficient. Now, in 6 years, you have drawn down the supply of available minerals, that is, the soluble minerals, to the point where there isn't enough. If you will let the thing alone, plant them, give the soil a year's rest undisturbed, the bacteria will produce a full year's work of providing soluble minerals. Then the next year you plant. And in addition to that year's production of minerals, you've got your backlog, your savings account of a year's production to draw on, and so on, till by 6 years you've used up your surplus. That's the real reasoning back of this. Now, God doesn't bother arguing these things with you. He tells you the result. If you're curious enough, you can look into it and find out why. So, you know the articles about what they call the hidden hunger? Sure, you can eat till your stomach groans under it, and you don't get enough. All right, listen to this. This is Micah 6, verses 13 and 14. Thou shalt eat, but not be satisfied. And it goes on to explain that this is as a punishment for violating God's law. Now, another thing, you'll find this in Leviticus 19, verses 23 to 25. It says that when you plant fruit trees, for the first 3 years, nothing can be eaten from that tree. As a matter of fact, you're not supposed to allow fruit to form on it for 3 years. You go around and nip off those buds. Now, the fourth year, the fruit that is produced then, you cannot have. You may bring it to the temple as a gift, but you can't have that for yourself. Even the fourth year, you can't be greedy. Now the fifth year and thereafter, you may have the fruit from that tree. See, this is starting from the time you first plant that thing. I don't mean that this is every 5 years. This is once in the beginning of the tree. I had a chance to see that actually put into practice. A friend of mine and his next door neighbor cleared the brush off the same side of the same hillside out near Escondido, the same year. They planted it to orange trees, and they were the same kind of tree the same year. Nothing but a barbed wire fence between my friend's orchard and his neighbor's. The same kind of soil, the same exposure to sunlight, the same everything, the trees planted the same year. And I got a look at that when the fifth year's crop was forming on the trees. Now the neighbor's trees didn't look like much. Their branches were thin and spindly, and they had a mediocre crop on them, and there was a wooden board prop under every branch so it wouldn't break under the weight of just a few oranges. My friend had followed this law. This was the first time that oranges had been permitted to form on that tree. His trees looked double the age of the other. Big trees. Thick branches. He had more than twice the crop that his neighbor had. There wasn't a prop under any of these branches, and there wasn't a one in danger of breaking under the weight of double the crop. The neighbor had tried to coax every orange he could off these trees from the time they were as big as weeds. All their strength had gone into producing a few oranges instead of producing good sound wood that would hold the crop. Now, when you totaled up the fifth year, my friend would have had more oranges for 5 years than his neighbor. He'd already made a profit by obeying God's law, and from then on it was pure value. These laws work. They're natural laws. They're not just theories. You know, the one that made all these things is the one who gave us the laws, and he knew what he was talking about. Another thing you'll find in Leviticus 23, verse 22, it said you must not reap your fields clear to the edges and corners. Now that sounds funny, doesn't it? Why, if you reaped every bit, sure, you'd have a few grains of wheat here and there. You could probably fill a bushel basket with what you're passing up now. Oh, we are more modern. Instead of the old-fashioned zigzag rail fence, we have our barbed wire fence, and we even come up and reap underneath where the barb projects, so we won't miss anything. And then we spend hundreds of million dollars a year for poisons to keep down the insects, and the insects are still getting ahead of us. And if you left those fence corners, there would be the cover where the birds would nest and breed, and the birds would take care of the insects, and they wouldn't charge you a penny for it. Sure. God knew what he was talking about. He made all this. Of course he can write the instruction book on it. Well, let's take the dietary laws for another sample. In Leviticus 7, verses 23 to 25, it says you must not eat animal fats. Don't eat the fat of the meat. Wasteful? You paid the butcher shop so much a pound for this and a quarter of it is fat? No. He's trying to save your life. You know, the last few years we've discovered that animal fat is the worst source of cholesterol of anything.